especially grateful and thankful to be here tonight, sober through the grace of God, this fellowship and the program. And I also have the privilege and the honor of introducing our speakers tonight. And I've known, at least Robin, I've known for a considerable period of time. And in recent months, or recent years now, have come to know her husband, Fernando. And we were at their wedding, and it was mostly an AA, for us, an AA wedding, surrounded with AA people, great people of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was an exciting wedding. But what we were really impressed with was Robin's, Fernando's excitement and enthusiasm for sobriety. And when Robin was asked to come to share here, she was excited to come and say and tell what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for her. And believe me, from where she come from, Alcoholics Anonymous has really worked. So, Robin's going first. Robin?
Oh, do you have a step stool for me?
Oh, just the step.
Wonderful. I like steps. My name is Robin. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, I have to tell you that it is a privilege to be here, and I'm really grateful to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, especially a sober woman. It can be so demoralizing, and can you hear me back there? Okay, let me fix this mic. Can you hear me now? How do I audition for the Verizon commercials? Can you hear me now? Okay, is that better? All right. It's especially demoralizing, I think, for me to be a woman alcoholic. There was so much shame for me drinking as a woman, and I'm so grateful that that shame is no longer necessary in my life because of the power of the steps and of this room, of these rooms, really. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like and what happened and what it's like now, as efficiently as I can in the amount of time that we have. The truth is that if we all had all night to sit here and talk, I could go on and on and on about the various things that have happened to me in my drinking, during the initial stages of my recovery and since, you know, in my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I have a limited amount of time, so I will do the best I can and know that my higher power will put out of my mouth whatever's supposed to come out. The disease of alcoholism progressed very, very rapidly in me, as it often does in women. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about how it progresses more rapidly in women. And I've had people in meetings tell me, "You're the least alcoholic-looking woman I've seen." And I think, well, what does an alcoholic look like, you know? And a lot of you didn't look the way I expected you to look when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had this preconceived idea myself about what an alcoholic looked like. An alcoholic was always dirty, always homeless, and always toothless, and that was absolutely not true. Sometimes an alcoholic is those things, but not always. Sometimes an alcoholic looks like a clean-cut girl that lived down the street from you in your clean-cut, you know, middle-class town. And my alcoholism, I thought, was a secret. I think my family knew, but a lot of people didn't. And that increased my shame. I thought I was a really bad, irresponsible, horrible person. And I was always trying to be good, and I was always trying to get it right. I didn't know until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous that I was sick, that I had a disease that affected my mind, my body, and my spirit. I didn't know that until I got here. I was 15 years old the first time I got really raging drunk. I grew up in an alcoholic home, but I don't believe that that's why I'm an alcoholic. Absolutely not. Maybe except for hereditary, but, you know, but I don't believe that because my dad is a drunk, I had to drink. I had to drink because I'm an alcoholic, period. You know, I know people that grew up in alcoholic homes that didn't go on trying to kill themselves with booze, and so, you know, just because you live in an alcoholic home or an abusive home or maybe life dealt you a hard hand doesn't mean that's why you drink. I drink, well, I don't know why you drink, but I know that I drink because I'm an alcoholic. And I'm glad that I know that today. I'm glad that I finally know what was wrong with me. Because my whole life, I felt like there's something wrong with me. I just didn't quite fit in, you know? I've heard people describe it around AA that it was like, I always felt like I was trying to put a round peg into a square hole. And it just didn't fit. And I just didn't fit anywhere, you know? And I remember feeling that way from very, very early in my life. By the time I was 8, my folks split up. My mom was unable to care for me and my brother. My dad was drinking, and he had full custody of us, so he was unable to care for us too. And I felt very much thrown away and abandoned by both of my parents at a very young age. And I remember thinking for a very long time that that was what was wrong with me, is I came from a broken home. And if you came from the home I came from, you would drink too. If you had the dad I had, you would drink too. If you got abused the way I got abused, both physically and emotionally, you would drink too. And I used that as an excuse for a long time for my drinking. So the first time I got drunk, I was 15. I was going to a nightclub. I had a friend that had an older sister that knew the guy at the door. You know how that works. And, you know, he got us in. And I remember we went through a drive-through dairy. Before we went to the club, and they got three big Ciscos, and one for each of us, and they gave me mine. And the club was 30 minutes away, and my parents, of course, thought that I was like going to the movies or something, you know. And by the time we got to the club 30 minutes away, my Cisco was gone, and they were still sipping on theirs. And they went on ahead of me into the club while I finished theirs as well. Three Ciscos in a 95-pound 15-year-old doesn't go over well. And I went into the club, and I remember not really even having a very good time because I was too busy walking around the tables, picking up half-empty bottles and drinking them because I didn't have an ID and I wasn't old enough to go up to the bar and order a drink. And that is my first experience with drinking. From the gate, I could not get enough. From the gate, I needed to have more. From the gate, it did not matter even if that booze was not mine. I mean, I was willing to, like, take other people's drinks without asking. I mean, I think they call it stealing. But I didn't see it that way. I just figured they're dancing. They don't want it, you know. And so that's how I was drinking right away. You know, I don't believe that, you know, the Big Book talks about this potential alcoholic idea, you know, how us young people might be but potential alcoholics. And I tried to convince my first sponsor that I was one of those, but she wasn't buying it, you know. I definitely didn't get to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous as a potential alcoholic. By the time I got to the rooms of alcohol, and I continued to drink that way, by the way, for like 8 years. And I got here, and I heard people that talked about drinking for 40 years, and I was so jealous that you all got to get away with it for so long. I thought, damn it, I only got to drink for 8 lousy years, and I'm already here with you, you know. And I wasn't happy about that, and you know. And I would hear, I heard, you know, that old-timers would tell us young folk that they drank more than we spilled. And I heard a younger person rebut to that once. Her rebuttal was, well, if you didn't spill so much, maybe you would got here sooner. And I felt that way, you know. And I could relate to that, you know. It's like I didn't spill my booze, you know. And you know, this is kind of embarrassing, but one time I walked to a liquor store and I got this bottle and it was in this paper bag and I was so drunk that I tripped and fell and it broke the glass in the bag and I brought the bag up to my face to suck the booze out of the paper bag. So even if I spilled, I had to suck up the excess. That's the kind of drunk I was. And I was under the delusion that I was cute, that I was sophisticated, and I was a lady. I mean, I don't know how many ladies suck juice out of a paper bag, but that's, you know. And my other thing, too, is that I'm absolutely powerless over alcohol, but when I drink, I'm also powerless over my bladder. And so I also have this problem not only of getting drunk in public, but of wetting my pants in public everywhere I go. And I don't know too many ladies that do that either. And but, you know, in my mind, because I started off with wine, I was a lady. And because I drank my vodka in fancy triangle-shaped glasses, I think they call martini glasses, you know, I was a lady. And, of course, I also prided myself in being able to take 10 shots of tequila in a row with no lime or salt. I don't know too many ladies that do that. So I drank as much as I could get my hands on, and thank God for alcohol. Thank God for alcohol. I was shocked when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I found out that people in AA did not have a contempt for drinking. We're not prohibitionists here. We don't think there's anything horribly wrong with it. I mean, maybe some of us think it's morally wrong, but AA, you know. Thank God for alcohol. In a way, alcohol kind of saved my life. I was nutty before I ever took a drink. Before that first drunk at that nightclub, I was absolutely nutty. In a fit of rage, I destroyed my stepfather and my mother's condo with a bat. I broke everything in the house in a fit of rage, just blind rage. And then I staged a robbery to cover it up. 15, I did this before I ever took a drink. You know, no, I think that's 14. I can't remember. And instead of facing the consequences for that, I think my folks wanted to put me in therapy or something, I opted to move back in with my alcoholic father. And that was hell. And I'd rather go back to hell than be responsible for my actions. And I didn't know why I even did it. I had no idea why I had done that. At that time, I now know it was because I was angry. I was angry because I felt alone. I felt abandoned, and I didn't know how to talk about that, you know? And I also think that there's just some mysterious ism that makes us do nutty things. I am bodily and mentally different than my fellows. And so I went back to live with my dad, and my dad got drunk one night, put a gun in my face, and scared the bejeebers out of me, and I ran away from home, and I was running around on the streets, and I got a horrible kidney infection a few months later because it's real hard to find a place to go to the bathroom when you're running the streets at 15. And that kidney infection almost killed me, and somebody picked me up and took me to the hospital, and they packed me in ice and pumped me full of antibiotics and sent me on my way, and I went back down to finally live with Mom again. And my mom and my stepdad had their hands full for a long time with me, and I moved in and out of their house 7 different times. I dropped out of high school halfway through my junior year. I was drinking every opportunity I had and hiding it as best as I could. And what's amazing is that to the dismay of my high school counselor and my parents, I had a 3.8 GPA. I was in the concert choir. I was interested in the mock trial in the girls' league. I ran on the cross-country team. There was nothing wrong with me. There was no reason why I couldn't have been a successful student. There was no reason why I couldn't have gotten into a great college. There was no reason why I couldn't have been everything that my parents dreamed of having in their little girl, except that I was an alcoholic that wasn't being treated for alcoholism because nobody knew, not even me. Nobody knew what was wrong with me, and I'm so grateful today that I know what's wrong with me. I'm so grateful that I know that I'm an alcoholic, and I'm so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous because the solution is in Alcoholics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous was named after the book. So the solution, if I say is in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's in the book. And what's in the book but the steps? 12 steps, and it's a design for living that's totally changed my life. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, the end of the end for me, after lots of drinking, just like the kind of drinking I just described, much, much more of the same. I think I had fun in my drinking a couple of times because it saved me from that insanity of, like, rage and destroying. Because when I drank, I wasn't mad no more. When I was drunk, it didn't matter no more that I was abandoned. When I drank, it didn't matter if you loved me. When I drank, it didn't matter if I loved you, you know. When I drank, it didn't matter if I did well in school. It didn't matter if I, all those feelings that I wasn't going to make it in the world. I mean, I didn't feel like I was going to make it in the world when I was 8. Most people don't start worrying about that till they're in high school or later, you know. And none of that mattered to me anymore. When I drank, when the car broke down, my solution was go to the bar. It just took all the care and concern of living away from me. You know, it was the ease and comfort that I always wanted when I first started drinking. And I'm sure I had a little bit of fun. Once I think I had fun in Rosarito, but I can't really remember the trip. So I think I had fun, though, because I don't remember anything too horrible about it. But I was a blackout drinker, you know. And so the beginning of the end for me was I had moved to this town called Fullerton because it was closer to my job. I was living with my folks in a town called Chino Hills and working, like, you know, an hour away. And what was happening is I was stopping after work to drink every day and then driving a long ways to go back to my parents' house. And I was really scared of getting a DUI. I was horrified of that because I wouldn't do jail well. Okay, I'm like 5 foot, little white girl, you know, 100 pounds. I'm like, I would not do jail well. And so I really was frightened of being arrested. And I had sat in the back of cop cars many times, but for some reason I just always got out of it. I'd been pulled over many times, drunk driving, you know. So I moved closer to my favorite bars. 2 days after I moved there, I decided I didn't want to drink there. I wanted to drink somewhere else. And I got in my car and got on the freeway. I just, no matter where I went, I wasn't going to be happy. And of course, it wasn't the alcohol, it was that bar. You know, I'd get restless, irritable, and discontented everywhere I went. And so I'd change brands of drink. You know, the tequila's making me pissed off. I'm going to go back to wine and drink like a lady. Or it's that damn bartender. He's such a jerk. I'm going to change bars. You know, and I can't believe they 86'd me. I only stole a wallet once. You know what I mean? Like, so I was kind of a stuck-up drinker in that sense. But so I got in the car, and I'm driving to L.A. I want to go drink in Hollywood. To hell with Orange County, you know. And I totaled my car going 68 miles an hour at impact on the freeway. Two other cars were involved, and I was drunk. And nobody was seriously hurt. My car was totaled. And I remember that they brought me to the hospital, and somehow I got through that and didn't get a DUI. They wrote on my release papers, don't drink and drive. They underlined it three times and put three exclamation points. But somehow I didn't get a DUI. They probably just failed to report it. California law requires hospitals to report it, but they didn't, and I didn't get a DUI. But I remember the next day I took the last, like, $10 that was in my pocket, because I was always living hand to mouth, and took a cab back to the apartment I was living in with two other girls that drank like I did. And it was a horrible apartment. They had this little pug dog that crapped on the floor all the time, and nobody picked it up. And it was just dirty and smelly and not ladylike at all. And, you know, my room always smelled like urine because I was always peeing on the bed, and I used to blame it on the dog. But or whoever I happened to bring home with me that night. And I'd look at him like it was his fault. And I'm not alone. I've heard other men and women say the same thing. So I'm not alone. That was one of the reliefs to me in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that I'm not the only one that did these embarrassing things. That was such a relief to me, because I thought I was the only one. You know, this is a disease of loneliness, man, and I thought I was the only one that hurt like I did, and I thought I was the only one that was embarrassed like I was. And I wasn't alone. I wasn't alone. And so I didn't have a drinking problem. I had a car payment problem, and after I totaled the car, that was taken care of. And I just walked to the bars. That's why I moved to that neighborhood anyway. It was closer to my favorite bars. And God has a sense of humor, because a month later, I broke my ankle drunk walking. And I did that actually on purpose. I ran into a light pole on foot on purpose, because it was New Year's Eve and I wanted to swing around it like they do in the movies. But in my drunken state, I failed to perceive that the light pole was like twice my width. And so I ran right into it and broke my ankle. And so then I couldn't walk to the bars anymore, and now I'm on crutches. And so I decided, well, I didn't really like walking. It wasn't safe for me to walk at night anyway. I don't have a drinking problem. I have a transportation problem. And so I called the cab company. And so I got a regular cab driver. Her name was Peggy. And Peggy would come pick me up every night, and she'd take me to the bar, because I was a bar drinker. I was too lonely to drink alone, although towards the end I really kind of had to, because it was getting too humiliating to drink in public, and besides, all my favorite places were throwing me out. And so I, in the end, I would sit in a room and flip through my phone book looking for a new name to call, and there never was one. There never was one, you know. Maybe some drug dealer that I owed money to, or my mom, who always looked at me with this look on her face of, like, it was a combination of disgust and terror. So I didn't want to call her, because I hated that look. I've heard it dubbed the Al-Anon look. And she doesn't look at me like that anymore, by the way. It's a relief. My mom looks at me, and she hugs me, and she's happy to see me, and it's great, you know. So Peggy would take me to the bar, and she'd come pick me up at 1:30, and she knew she had to be there at 1:30 because I had to scrape up enough money in the bar, and I don't even want to tell you how I managed to do that, but I found my ways to get a little bit of extra money before I left the bar. Sometimes I stole it, sometimes I finagled it in my own ways, and I had to have that money when I left the bar, because I had to get a bottle before I went home, because I had to have something to nurse me back to life in the morning. 3 weeks of that, I'd hobble my way into the bar on my crutches because my ankles broke, and I propped the crutches up on the bar next to me, and I'd sit at the end of the bar drinking alone. Even the drunks in the bars didn't want to drink with me because they knew that they'd get thrown out with me when I did. So they stayed away from me so that they could be left alone to drink. And it was just demoralization like nothing I can even begin to describe. But if you're an alcoholic like me, man, you know what I'm talking about. I don't have to try to describe it. And Peggy had come pick me up. And one day I came to on that urine-soaked mattress. It was freezing cold. It was the middle of January, just like it is now. And I called Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew about AA because the preacher of my church when I was a kid was always saying my dad needed to go. And I knew that's where people went that drank too much. And I thought maybe my drinking too much might have something to do with my state. And they sent me to a meeting at a club just like this one. And I called Peggy and I said, Peggy, I'm not going to the bar tonight. I'm going to 218 North Malden, which was the address, the place I went. And she pulled up next to the club, and she turned around, she looked at me, and she said, honey, do you need me to pick you up in an hour and a half? And I thought, how does she know how long I need to be here? She must know that this is AA. Oh, my God, she knows I'm an alcoholic. You know, like getting into her cab every night full of urine and booze didn't give me away. And I never saw Peggy again, but she was one of my many angels. She got me home safe every night. Because to be an alcoholic woman means that I'm always seconds and inches away from death or destruction, you know. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the people that delivered me home safely. And even in that state, that she didn't think that I was too beneath her to help me. And I hobbled my way into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on those crutches. And I remember thinking I didn't even know why I went. You know, I thought, why am I here, man? I don't know what I'm here for. And I remember that first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, somebody carried me a half a cup of coffee. And I cry every time I talk about this cup of coffee because I didn't even like coffee. Okay, now I can't get enough of it. But I should practically own stocks in Starbucks. But, you know, somebody carried me a cup of coffee. And it was the first kind thing that anybody had done for me in a long time, and justifiably so. It's not exactly like I was making it very easy for people to be nice to me. And it was the first kind gesture, and it was the smallest thing. It was just a cup of coffee. But it meant that somebody noticed I was alive, and somebody cared if I had a moment of comfort. And I've had nothing but that in Alcoholics Anonymous in the last 6 years of my sobriety. I'm in rooms full of people that care that I'm alive and will go out of their way just to see that I have a moment of comfort. And that ease and comfort that I got from booze, I now get from the steps and my higher power and the people and the fellowship and the service and all of the things that Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer me. You know, and today, instead of those superficial acquaintances of people in the bars, I have real meaningful relationships with people, and we talk about real things, and Alcoholics Anonymous has afforded me so much in my life. You know, I'm a high school dropout, and now I'm a straight-A college student. You know, one more semester, my GPA is going to be back up over a 3.0. And I've had the same job for, you know, the last 5 years, and I got married in April, and me and my husband went to Kauai, and I never used to leave the bar stool, you know. And a girl I sponsored was my maid of honor, and I got to see her pick up 2 years, and that meant more to me than my own chip, to see other people recover. It says in the big book that's something you will not want to miss. You must not miss working with others and seeing other people get this thing too, you know. And it was drilled into me from the very beginning. My first sponsor told me, she said, Robin, pay attention to what we're doing here. I'd go to her house every Tuesday to work the steps, and whether I drank or not, because I drank the first year of going to meetings before I stayed sober. I ended up in a low-bottom indigent detox. And I came to in there, and I thought, how did a nice girl like me get here? You know, this is where the homeless bums go, and I thought, I'm a homeless bum. The first year of my sobriety, the best I could do was live in a garage. I didn't have a toilet or a heater. You know, the car I was driving was going to be repossessed. I did not do well in my first year of sobriety. I had 6 different jobs. It wasn't easy for me. It wasn't easy. And I remember thinking, if this is what sobriety is, I don't want it. And if I left 5 minutes before the miracle happened, man, I would have missed it all. I would have missed it all. I'm a stepmom to a beautiful child today. You know, it's like I would have missed that. I would have missed it all if when I was sitting in that garage, I thought, oh, to hell with this. Sobriety isn't any good. You just got to hang in there, man. You got to hang in there long enough for the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous to enter your life and your heart. you know, and get busy as soon as possible. Work the steps as fast as you can, man, and go help other people as fast as you can. Get in here. Get in the middle of the pack. My first sponsor told me, pay attention, Robin, because the only reason why God's sparing you is so you can turn around and spare someone else. I didn't like that so much because I didn't think I had anything to offer. And if I did, I wasn't going to give it to you. You know, that was my idea in the beginning, you know. And she also told me, get in the middle of the pack and keep moving because you can't hit a moving target, you know. And so I just got busy, man. I made the coffee and I passed out the chips and I did the literature commitment and I secretaried meetings and, you know, I sat in the committees and I went to the picnics and I went to the potlucks and I went to the dances and I went to the, oh, I just got real busy in Alcoholics Anonymous and it saved my life and I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I am 29 years old. I've got 6 years of sobriety and if I live to be 100 and I stay sober, God willing, well, God's always willing. If I stay out of God's way and I stay sober until I'm 100 years old, there's no way that if I'm of service in Alcoholics Anonymous, I could ever repay back what it's already given me. You know, it's like I do a little bit and I get so much back in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not a fair deal. It's really not fair, but I'm not going to argue with my higher power. It doesn't work. You know, when I argue with my higher power, it doesn't go over too well. I end up self-will run riot and everything's all messed up. So I don't argue. I don't argue with my higher power about the gifts I receive, and I try not to argue with my higher power about the gifts I don't receive. I try to just show up where God wants me and do what God wants me to do and keep learning about how to know what that is. The serenity prayer, you know, the wisdom to know the difference. And I'm so grateful for my sobriety. I'm so grateful that I'm not living that lonely, desperate hole of despair that I once thought life really was. And that wasn't reality at all. The big book says that we can't tell the difference between truth and false. And the way I was living wasn't reality at all. My perception was so twisted. Reality for me today is the love that I find here, the hope that I find here. There's hope. Man, if you feel like you just can't go any lower than you've been, well, you might be able to go lower, but there is hope. It doesn't matter how far down the scale you've gone. There's hope. There's hope for all of us. You know, if you just do a few simple things, get a sponsor, work the steps, go to the meetings, it'll start sounding like Mary Had a Little Lamb. There's no big secret. There's no big secret. You know, you just do a few simple things and your life gets better and it's not always perfect. At a year and a half sober, I was institutionalized for suicidal depression. So it hasn't always been perfect and it hasn't always been easy. But I wouldn't trade not one second of it, not even having to like go to the bathroom in front of other people because they were afraid I was going to try to kill myself with a plastic toothbrush, you know. I wouldn't trade any of it. I wouldn't trade not one minute of my journey for what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a design for living that really works. Please keep coming back if you're new. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Robin. Also, I've known her husband, Fernando, for just a few years, but they spent the weekend with us. And in that short weekend, we got to really know each other. Got to know Fernando and the excitement and enthusiasm he has for Alcoholics Anonymous, active in the program. His eyes sparkle with his joy and sobriety and serving others. He's really active over in Calvary, just like his wife. We've really had a tremendous week with him. We've been blessed. Fernando. Would you welcome Fernando?
Thank you, Frank. Good evening, everyone. My name's Fernando, and I'm a filthy, homeless, smelly alcoholic. I'm one of the other kind of alcoholics she was talking about. I want to thank Frank and Betty for their hospitality. And inviting us here, it's been a pleasure and an honor. We got to speak at a noon meeting today, and I'm really grateful for that and for the time we got to spend with them. You know, thank you both. We really appreciate it. We've thoroughly enjoyed the time we've gotten to spend with both of you. And thank you all for being here. I want to welcome the newcomers. I don't live out here, but I know that what I say, anybody with any time, feels in that we want you here, we need you here, and we love you here. You know, we understand in a way that the non-alcoholic cannot understand the magic in a bottle. You know, and If you understand that, you're in the right place. You know, and the magic in the bottle. I chased it in a vision for you. It talks about, you know, for most normal folks, drinking is conviviality, friendship, warm feelings, a good time. You know, but for the alcoholic, it's everything. And they chase it, and they chase that feeling for years, and I chase that feeling for a long, long time. You know, I don't look like I'm old enough to have chased it for a long time, but I got sober in my 20s, but I started real young, and you'll hear that in my story. The most important thing I can share tonight is I haven't had to take a drink or put any other drug in my body to change how I feel since April 28th, 1998, and for that I'm very grateful. And thank you. And I can't take credit for one day of that. You know, the credit goes to my sponsor, my home group, and my higher power. I wouldn't be sober without a sponsor. My sponsor is Armando G., who lives in Stanton, California. That's in Orange County, and it's about 5-10 minutes from my house. You know, it's a good idea to pick a sponsor that where there's not too many bars in between you and that sponsor. You know, I've had the opportunity to speak faraway places. People come, can you be my sponsor? Too many bars between us, son. I see a lot of people willing here. Why don't you ask them? Yeah, I wouldn't be sober without a home group. And this time when Alcoholics Anonymous finally stuck, I heard a really important word, which is important as my sponsor in the 12 step, and that's a home group. And my home group is a Moe's Men's Stag meeting on Thursday nights in Fullerton, California at 8 p.m. at Moe's Music in the back. And if you're ever in Orange County, up in North Orange County in Fullerton, please come visit us. There's a lot of time and a lot of recovery in that meeting. And I wouldn't be sober if I didn't work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with my sponsor. And I wouldn't be sober if I did not continue to be willing to work the steps with the newcomer. You know, my book tells me I need the newcomer to recover. And that's why I'm so welcoming and grateful to see newcomers in meetings. I cannot recover without you. You know, and whether you stay sober or not, I cannot recover without you. And you will always be welcome in this room or any other room of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't let anybody chase you out just because you come in smelling like booze. You know, I went to a lot of meetings drunk, and nobody kicked me out. And real quick, I want to say a little disclaimer. I didn't drive all the way out here from California to tell y'all how to do it. I know y'all don't give a rat's butt how we do it in California. Frank warned me, and you know, and so that's not why I'm here. I'm here to share just my experience. So, you know, and I can get preachy, I've been told, or I can sound preachy. And I'm just sharing my experience, and I'm passionate about Alcoholics Anonymous because what it's done for me and what it's done for the people around me, you know, but most importantly, what it's done for me. That's where it means the most to me. And, you know, if what I say bothers anybody, you know, call your sponsor, work it out with them. And if that doesn't work, come back next week. There'll be a different speaker. I was born in East Los Angeles to two alcoholics. And my mother has told me the whole time she was pregnant with me, she shot heroin, dropped LSD, and drank whiskey. She did not plan on having being a mother. You know, they were involved in gangs, my parents, and in drug trafficking and the Mexican mafia, so that wasn't their plan. But being alcoholics and being kind of preoccupied with partying and not being real responsible, she didn't make it to the clinic, so here I am. And thank God. And I don't remember my first drink. Obviously, I was in my mother's womb, but I'm pretty sure I probably enjoyed it based on how much I loved to drink after I came out. And I do not remember my first drink. My parents made it. The party was always at our house. So I had plenty of opportunity and seized that opportunity to pick up a drink early while they were talking to their friends and drinking and, you know, carrying on and having a good time. You know, I was sneaking under their noses drinking their drinks, you know, cleaning out the cups that were left around the party. Kind of like Robin was doing at a club, but I was just a little kid. And I loved the effect produced by alcohol. In the doctor's opinion, it says men and women drink essentially because they love the, they enjoy the effect produced by alcohol. And though they can admit it's injurious, they, after a period of time, they cannot differentiate the true from the false. Now that happened probably by the time I was in the sixth grade. You know, and I was blessed. I thought it was a blessing. Maybe it was a curse. I don't know. It doesn't matter. To have older cousins around me who were 2 and 3 and 4 years older than me who were already, you know, knew about the drinking game and knew where to get booze and what in Los Angeles, in the county of Los Angeles where I grew up, they weren't real careful about checking how old you were. You could look like a 12-year-old and they'd sell you a case of beer. And they weren't too concerned about abiding the law. They just wanted to make a sale. So they knew which liquor stores would sell to minors, and we'd go there. And if, you know, if they had just been visited by the police and were scared, we, you know, we could get an uncle to buy us booze, or we could just stand outside and see a drunk walking in, or somebody walking in who was probably a drunk, because they were the ones who would buy us the booze. Hey, buddy, you got $20, can you get us a case and a bottle? You know, sure, as long as I can get a cut, you know. Oh, here, you could have a six-pack. You know, and then we'd take our booze and go our way, and he'd go his way. And I loved everything about drinking. To me, people that drank were the coolest. You know, kids that were into sports and into academics and into karate, and they were dorks. You know, I wanted to be a hoodlum like my cousins. And so that's what I gravitated towards. You know, right away, I liked how drinking looked, and I definitely liked what drinking did for me. And I felt like drinking made me feel how I thought men looked. You know, because I always suspected that I was a little weak, scared punk. And I always felt uncomfortable in my skin. But when I took a drink, I was just like my dad, you know, a tough guy. I was just like the guys I saw on the street corner, smoking cigarettes, selling drugs, and drinking out of a brown paper bag. You know, I had arrived. You know, so right away, you know, I'm already a full-blown alcoholic and I'm just a teenager. By the time I was 16, I was puking blood on a regular basis, you know. And my dad, he was sober for a while in the church, and that quit working for him. And he had been forced to go to AA for a DUI, and they gave him a big book at this meeting. And right before he went to prison, he gave me the big book and said, I'm not going to need this. I don't need this. I'm not an alcoholic. Like 2 weeks later, he went to prison for a DUI, and he was trafficking cocaine, so that kind of sent him away, but he didn't need the book. But okay. And he went to prison, and he was sober for a little bit in the church, relapsed, went to prison, and then my mom, who was trying to keep a roof over our head and food on the table, you know, had to get like 2-3 jobs to keep paying the bills. So basically, I had no supervision. I didn't have much supervision when he was around anyways, because they were so involved in their lives. But I really went berserk. And when you sit in your room all day, every day, your junior and senior year of high school, and drinking, and you don't show up, they don't give you a diploma. They didn't give me one. And, you know, and my disease is progressing, and I'm starting to call my mom from far away places. I'd go to parties with my friends, you know, out in Eagle Rock or, you know, far away places, and I would get drunk and belligerent. My friends would leave me because they don't want to hassle with me. You know, because one time we were coming home from a party, and we were on a really long street in Dime Bar, and we were doing like 90 miles per hour. And my friends, I don't know how drunk they were. I was pretty shit-faced. And I just thought it was necessary to grab the wheel from the driver. I was sitting shotgun. I grabbed the steering wheel and spun it. And when you're doing 90 miles per hour, that's not going to turn out pretty good. You know, the car spun and flipped over, and glass was flying everywhere. And you know, I'm lucky nobody died. And the car landed upside down and slid upside down into incoming traffic coming towards us, and stopped on the other side of the street. And, you know, we all were smoking, and there was gasoline leaking into the car, and I came to, and I had my mouth was full of glass because the windshield popped, and I crawl out of the car being the unselfish, caring person that I was. I smell gasoline. I crawl out of the car and ran 10 blocks away and looked at the car and waited for it to blow up. I didn't try to help anybody out. I didn't pull my friends out. And then when I saw them slowly crawling out, I ran over there laughing hysterically. And so after that, my friends didn't want to give me a ride home anymore from parties. And so I would call my mom and, hey, I'm in Walnut, and at this time we had moved to Pomona, and Walnut's pretty far away. I need a ride home, and I sounded drunk, and she came once. And then after I was acting berserk in her car, she didn't come pick me up no more. She drew the line. My dad was in prison, so I knew I could go crazy. And one time, I called her, and she wouldn't come and get me, and me and my friend were hitchhiking, and these guys picked us up, and they got right around the corner from my house, and they pulled a gun on me and my friend, and they wanted to rape us. And I was drunk and crazy. I'm like, go ahead, shoot me, motherfucker. Go ahead. I scared them. They're like, this guy is serious. So I grabbed my friend and ran out of the car and ran to my house, bursted in the door, and started breaking stuff in the house. My mom came out. What's going on? It's your fault. I almost died. It's your fault. Always blaming everybody else. Bottles are but symptoms for me. Selfishness and self-centeredness. Self will run riot. Never wanting to take responsibility. And so my dad called me. She told my dad what happened, and he was getting sober in prison. And so he drew the line, and he called me up, and he called the house and said, put the boy on the phone. So I got on the phone. Well, yeah, what do you want? He said, you got one day to move out. My mom told me what you did. You're not going to be doing that while I'm here. And if you don't leave and it happens again, I will break out of this prison and come kill you. Or I will have it done. And I knew he was the kind of guy that could do that. So I left. So I was living. I got to, go out in the world, a big man, college or high school dropout. Full-blown alcoholic. So I did the next best thing and went and lived in my grandparents' garage, put them through hell, stole money from them, put them through the ringer, tornado through their lives. But a bad thing happened in my perspective is they passed away and my mom inherited the property. So guess what? We know about you. Hit the road, buddy. You can't live in the garage anymore. We're selling the house anyways. So I flummoxed around, getting always worse, never better. And when I was just turned 21, two weeks after I was 21, I got a DUI. Surprise, surprise. I get to drive, and first thing I do, boom, DUI. And I don't know how it is in Arizona, but in California, they're real uptight about people driving shit-faced, really narrow-minded, particularly narrow-minded in California. And so I got a DUI, and I had to do the deal, and I didn't get a lawyer or nothing. They said, you blew a 2.6. How do you want to plead? But back then it was 0.08 in California was the legal limit. And I said, God, I can't get out of this one. That's probably sounds kind of like I'm way over the limit. So I said, I'm guilty. So I went to AA and I went to the first, they gave me a directory, and I had to, they said, you want payments for the fine? I never paid the fine, see a probation officer, never went to see the dude. Go to alcohol school. I did that. I dragged my feet on the other things. And when I finally got to AA, I went to the Triangle Club in Pomona, California. It's one of the oldest clubs in California. It was founded in 1960. And it was a meeting like this, the table. And what baffles me about Alcoholics Anonymous, not so much anymore today. But back then, the readings looked the same. And then when I came back like 5 years later, I'm like, don't they update this stuff? Medicine and science in psychiatry and psychology has made profound advancements. Why don't they at least update the font? You know, but it was the same people, the same room full of people that look like Frank. Longtime members, and I'm not exaggerating. Seriously. And they're saying the same, gotta get a sponsor, gotta work. I'm like, duh. Jesus Christ. But I didn't know all that yet. I got to my first meeting and everybody goes around the room, you know, in California. They do introductions around the room. Hi, I'm Pete. Hi, I'm Bill. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, I'm Sue. I'm an alcoholic. And they got to me and I just said, oh, I'm just here on a court card. And, you know, I'm just here to get my court card signed. And it's a disease of perception. Remember this. The woman that was leading the meeting after all the introductions flipped the table over and stood up and pointed at me and screamed at me, you know, you're a full-blown alcoholic, you're a dead man, you're going to die. That's my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. No, but the funny part is that years later, after working the steps, what really happened is she said, you know, welcome to AA, we're glad you're here. Keep coming back. Even, you know, that's okay. You don't think you're an alcoholic. Disease of perception. You know, my disease doesn't want me here. So when people, you know, that's what I saw. And I, for years, I thought that's AA. They're crazy. You know, and you know, did my meetings, got my court card signed, took care of all that, you know, and then a couple years later, ended up in a rehab, you know, and this time I'm a drug addict, you know. I go there not, they were firing me from the job because I kept no showing and I'd show up 4 hours late, drunk, and you know, and I know enough to know that if you say you got a problem, they can't fire you, they gotta give you treatment. And I was on a thread. And the guy, we had the paperwork, the termination papers, my last check, everything. And I peeked, he went out, he stepped out of the room for the second, I peeked, what does he need to talk to me about? Oh shit, I'm gonna get fired. He walks in the room, I got a problem. Need to go to treatment. And he's like, here's the EAP number. So I call the EAP, I got a problem. Are you an alcoholic? No, not alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. Like it's got some kind of status. Like it's cool. Like it was a step up from alcoholic in my mind. So I go to this treatment center and there's an old guy who's one of the counselors. He's got 17 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Looks like Frank. Great guy. And I like talking to the guy. We got along, we clicked, loved the guy, because you know, one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic was working already and I didn't even know it, and I didn't want it, but it was still working. And it comes around to that. You know, did you get a sponsor yet? I'm looking. All right. Doing interviews, putting out applications. I'll get to it, man. Did you guys quit with that stuff? Didn't stay sober there, you know, and after my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had to try every other way except Alcoholics Anonymous to get and stay sober for 8 years. Wandered into Orange County in 1998. Moved in with a girlfriend. She ran for her life. Left the apartment empty. I showed up. I was like, I didn't know we were moving. We weren't. She just didn't tell me. You know, I didn't know how I was going to pay the rent. I knew I'd be on the street again. And, you know, I knew it wouldn't work. I knew in my heart of hearts, Alcoholics Anonymous is not going to work. You know, I'd already did Alcoholics Anonymous. And, I went to the to this guy, this psychiatrist guy to get drugs who was in the community, like mental health or whatever, and he told me, I can't do nothing for you. You need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'd been seeing him, you know, for a while. And I was like, you know, and I was laying in the fetal position in an empty apartment, knowing I had a week to leave. And I prayed to a God I didn't believe in, please kill me. Let me die. I was dead and empty and on the inside. My liver and kidneys were shutting down. I just got out of UCI Medical Center. My immune system was so destroyed, I had mold growing out of my back, in my skin. You know, I was about 100 pounds less than I am now. You know, and I thought I was cool. I had piercings all over my face. I'm from LA. I had a giant bull ring. She saw it. You know, I had a beard, a mohawk that was always floppy. My clothes were rags, filthy rags that were held together by dental floss and punk rock patches, and my shoes were Chuck shoe, like Converse tennis shoes were held together by duct tape. If you took the duct tape away, there'd be more duct tape than shoe. And I hadn't showered. And I didn't have to tell people I was new. They could smell I was new. And there was no friendly direction. No one else to borrow money from. Nobody else to bail me out. My mom was getting in recovery. She didn't want nothing to do with me. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, a speaker meeting, and no one talked to me. And to this day, my second sponsor and a lot of people in the clubhouse where I went to said they were scared of me because how I looked and the vibe I put off. You know, and I'm not, you can ask my wife, she knows these people, they were afraid of me. No one talked to me except these guys and a men's stag, and I knew I needed a sponsor. I heard Jim from the rehab 5 years earlier, you got a sponsor? Need a sponsor. That's just mumbling that to myself, walking around like a zombie, one aspirin away from a wet brain. And I asked the guy to be my sponsor, and I haven't had to take a drink since then. That was my surrender, asking another man to run my life, to be my daddy. That's what I thought it was, and it wasn't. That's not what it is. He worked the steps with me. You know, I had all these preconceptions, you know. If you're new, I suggest, it's only a suggestion, take the words I know out of your vocabulary. The words I know are the disease, that was its biggest tool for me. You got to get a sponsor. I know. Deep. Mind slam shut. You need to get a home group. I know. Deep. Need to go to meetings. I know. Deep. Well, if you know, why ain't you doing it? And I also want to say one more thing that I learned in 8 years that just sitting in a meeting and not drinking no matter what is not the treatment for alcoholism. Today, I watch a lot of people in Orange County sit in a lot of meetings and drink. I have sat in a lot of meetings and drank. You know, the only way out for me was the 12 steps. I could sit in a meeting. I've sat in meetings all day, every day, in my mid-20s, and went out and drank. I only got relief from the bottle when I got a sponsor and got in the book. Alcoholics Anonymous isn't for those that need it. And I needed it for a long time. Alcoholics Anonymous isn't for those that want it. And there was a period of time, a year or two, where I wanted it. Alcoholics Anonymous is for those that do it. And I couldn't get it till I did it. Thank you.